Hey, Phil.
Hey, Laurie.
Welcome to Super Baby Bros and Movie Land, listeners. Episode 40, can you believe it?
4-0.
That's 40. Well, in fact, it's more than 40 episodes on the trot, because we've been doing one every week, and I had my A and B episodes, blah, blah, blah. We've been doing loads and loads since November.
How are you feeling at 40?
Well, I mean, old, generally, yeah.
Just old, just
yeah,
creaky.
I mean, I feel like we've settled into a bit of a groove, and it's got a bit easier doing the show and everything. But I think we've also become a bit crankier, bit creakier. What do you reckon?
I think it's probably true. I mean, last week you were ill, weren't you? You're basically on death's door with your tonsillitis, and you were kind of hallucinating almost.
I was definitely a bit more delirious than usual. I mean, who knows how much better I'm feeling this week? Tonsillitis, no longer. But anyway, look, this is all boring stuff. Listeners, we've got a great episode in the works for you. We've already recorded some of the bits, haven't we?
Yep, some of it's in the bank, ready to be spent.
But we've seen three more amazing blockbuster movies, which we're going to review. Phil, what are they?
So I've gone to see War Dogs, the new Jonah Hill, Miles Teller movie. Yep. You've gone to see
Bad Moms. I went to see that with Judith. Actually, Judith is going to make a guest appearance to review that with us.
And then independently, you went to see another film, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Julieta. It's a sort of surprising film to see on the bill, really. It's a Spanish language movie that, to be honest, seems a bit more at home in an art house cinema, but it's mainstream, so everyone, there's a chance to see it. I'll be telling you what I thought.
While I was in London, I saw like a very trendy cinema advertising it, so I thought,
yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's a trendy film.
The poster's very trendy as well. But look, we'll get onto all those trends later, Phil. And you wouldn't want Another Man on the Case and Laurie Trent Bailey.
What are you talking about?
So rubbish. Listeners, thank you so much for everyone who's got in touch in the last week. I've got to give a quick note on YouTube, because we did announce last week that what we've been watching, which normally comes midweek on the podcast feed, is switching to YouTube rather than a podcast download. And you'll notice neither thing has happened yet. We did try and say last week that YouTube hadn't launched, but what Phil and I have been doing is working really hard to get it all done. And a video obviously takes a bit more time. It's a bit different because of the clips that have to be edited. But don't you worry. I believe by the time this podcast has gone out, you can head to YouTube, see the most recent What I've Been Watching, which is a good one, isn't it, Phil?
It is very good.
What are the films again?
I did Turner & Hooch and I did Big.
You did Big. And I did The Kingdom of Dreams and Madness, which is a Studio Ghibli documentary, brilliant, and Youth in Revolt, which was less good. But either way, look on YouTube for that, and hopefully you won't be disappointed.
And also, we're going to try and upload some of the segmented bits from this week's podcast and other things like that. So check it out. It's going to be worth it.
Yeah, definitely. But sorry if you went there looking for us and couldn't find us. And we're also going to have emails and tweets. Thank you very much. Loads of people have been in touch as always. And well, we always say, I know, in fact, it was even said to me this week that some people I know socially who even listen to this podcast, amazing.
You know people socially? Well,
that's the more amazing thing, yeah. But also amazing is the fact they listen to the show and they've not even emailed. So look, if you haven't emailed the show, we want to know what you think, so let us know.
Don't be afraid. We're very friendly people. We're not going to be too harsh on you, but we'll be fair.
The thing is, you say that, but if they listen to the show, they know exactly what we do with emails, and maybe that's why they're not emailing.
I think what the important thing is to distinguish is we're aggressive towards the email, not the emailer, you know.
No, don't say that. We're not always aggressive either. Okay, forget it. Just send us, just email in, and we'll be delighted to have that. Thanks. And thanks as always to Odeon, Magdalen Street, George Street in Oxford. Thank you for your support of the podcast. It makes a great big difference.
Yes, thank you very much. Very nice of you. Thanks.
And they've been particularly friendly and enthusiastic over the summer period, I've got to say. And that's a lot of blockbusters to be cheerful about. So well done.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks.
Anything more to add, Phil?
I don't think so. I'm normally the one to forget it. So I think I should ask you if there's anything more to add. You
I don't
can tell
think
me.
So. And that makes me worry. But there we go. All right, let's kick it off.
Let's go. Engage. Laurie, what were you achieving when you were 25?
When I was 25, that was a very good year. Do you know what I'm doing?
That's Frank Sinatra, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, but I won't go any further down that road. I was working, I think. I had graduated at that point. I believe I was working for an economics firm.
How much money were you earning?
Not much, Phil. No.
Not much, you know?
Yeah, not much at all. Certainly like a sub-20K.
Sub-20K, okay. Yeah. So you weren't like contracted by the Pentagon or anything like that?
As it happens, I wasn't. No.
No, no.
What are you asking me, Phil?
Well, guess
what? Are you trying to rat me out or something?
War Dogs is the story of two real life guys who ended up, they're sort of 25 years old, and they are contracted by the Pentagon. They're doing weapons level contracts for the United States government.
How about that?
And earning a bucket load.
Yeah, I bet.
So this film stars Jonah Hill and Miles Teller, who you might know from Whiplash.
Yeah, absolutely. And less impressively, the Divergent series, and Fantastic. Yeah, that film.
Yeah, exactly. He's an up-and-coming star.
I think super talented, personally.
Super talented, yes, I agree. This is directed by the guy, Todd Phillips, who did the Hangover movies.
Odd choice, is it? I mean, is this a sort of Big Short thing where a really serious topic gets a comedy director?
I think it's more like a comedy director trying to do something serious. That's the direction it goes in. Based on a real-life true story, two real guys. Should we play a clip?
Yeah, well, do you want to tell us any more or not? Or do you think the clip will do it for us?
I think the clip kind of gives a sense of the tone. This is them on their way to Iraq. They've got to get to Iraq and they're having to take a bit of a dodgy way to get there.
Okay, fine. Here we go.
Hey, seriously, is this safe driving to Baghdad?
Yes. Very safe. 50-50.
50-50 what? Like 50% we live, 50% we die?
Yes. That's why we drive through night. It's much safer.
How much safer?
50-50.
Bro, obviously he doesn't know what 50-50 means.
Oh my God.
Hey, what about gas though? It's a long trip, no?
No problem. Petrol free in Iraq.
No kidding. Free gas.
Yeah.
See what I'm talking about? Iraq is dope. I'm thinking about getting a place there. Free gas. Cool, man.
So there you go. That's a really good, I think, indication of the tone. It's slightly comedic, but there's kind of an edge to the humor because it's real life and it's based around a war. They are war dogs.
I'm getting that Miles Teller is the straight guy to Jonah Hill's funny man there. Is that right?
Jonah Hill's character is sort of this bizarre, eccentric guy. He's called Ephraim. He's larger than life. He has a very bizarre little laugh. And he is kind of this showboat character. And then Miles Teller is definitely kind of the straight man. I agree. Yeah, his name's David. Miles Teller is brought in to Ephraim's operation. So it's already slightly up and running. The name of the film comes from the kind of the name of what they were doing originally, which is the Pentagon lists loads and loads of contracts that you can apply for on a website. And anyone can apply for them because they just have so many needs for weapons and things like that. And armor and army equipmentization.
Yeah, supply stuff.
Supplies, yeah. And so these guys, they basically go for the really small ones, the ones which nobody else is going to do, because they're not the big fish. And they kind of, they live on the scraps, basically, of the Pentagon. But basically, the scraps of the Pentagon, it's the Pentagon. So huge scraps for little guys. And then they, having done those sort of things, they kind of work their way up. It's kind of an empire-building movie. I have to say, I was intrigued by the marketing, but having seen the name Todd Phillips, the Hangover guy, I was a little bit not sure about this. He's not one for subtlety or particular nuance or really any sort of deft handling.
No, and I have to admit, the Hangover films feel like they're directed by someone with a hangover because they sort of lurch from one thing. I know. Whoa!
Zing!
I'm here all week. No, they sort of lurch from one scene to the other and sequence to the next without it just in a completely disjointed and lumbering way. Whereas this film looks like it needs quite handy structure. Am I right?
Yeah, there is structure. I think it works well. There's a couple of leaps in time and maybe there's a slight imbalance in some of the pacing in the first half, but the story is quite a familiar one. It's kind of, it's got some pathos to it, I think. That's
okay.
The right word.
Yeah. I'm sure it is, Phil.
And I was carried along. It was a nice length sort of movie, only just under 2 hours. I was invested in the characters. I wanted to see how it was going to end up. It starts the movie with kind of a scene much later on in the movie. And sort of says, how did I get here?
Fine. Yeah.
And then carries on. So I think it just works. And actually, I was kind of laughing and engaged and interested. And I wanted to know how it was going to happen.
Have you got any notes on the historical accuracy thing without giving away any plot points?
The only thing, so it's based on a true story. I think you probably can tell where they've taken liberties just for the sake of a story.
Right.
And they filled in conversations that just probably wouldn't have happened in real life. And it might sidestep a couple of darker parts of the story.
Oh, really? For the keeping it light?
Yeah, I've read a couple of reviews around this myself, and some reviewers seem to have issues with the fact that it's not more dark, and it doesn't really address morally the kind of implications of being the guys
who
supply wars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It doesn't really ever address that. It's more about them as a business enterprise, I think, and this just happens to be their business.
And is it funny or is the tone sort of dramatic? I mean, you're saying it could be darker and they've gone light. What kind of film is it?
It's kind of a dramedy or something like
right,
that.
Right, okay.
It's got funny moments. Miles Teller knows how to deliver a joke. Jonah Hill definitely does.
Yeah.
He's kind of creepy funny, I think, is the way to
Jonah Hill.
Yeah, Jonah Hill's, his character, Ephraim, is kind of unhinged and a bit sort of nuts. It's serious in the sense that it's a serious topic, but it definitely wants to have fun with that. Todd Phillips is a funny guy. He wants to make fun of the ridiculousness of the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is ridiculous. It is crazy how these young guys, these 25-year-olds, are dealing with the Pentagon and dealing with army generals. There's no reason why they should be. So I remember ages ago, a film critic, I remember him saying, basically every director at some point tries to remake Goodfellas. That's what they want to do.
Right.
And I feel like this is Todd Phillips' attempt at Goodfellas.
Okay.
It's got a voiceover. It's got sort of a rise and fall sort of empire arc. And it's got this whole based on a true story vibe. And it's kind of flair. Like, it's got a bit of flair to it all. And with that, then, I don't know if you've seen Goodfellas.
No, I haven't actually.
Oh, it's great, man. You see it. The film is about them. It's not about the situation. It's not about the wider context of their moral actions or anything like that. It's about them making money and the steps that they take to make money, criminal or not criminal or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, sure.
And so it kind of, if you limit it scope to just a personal story about these two guys in this situation, it makes sense. But actually, probably against the film, I'd say, it really should address some of the implications, some of the moral implications that these guys are funding war
and, yeah, sure.
and all that comes with that.
So overall, man, it sounds like this is a bit more lightweight than I might have imagined, but that you more or less enjoyed it. It's not like a heavyweight in cinema, but it's fine.
I think it's a very engaging, kind of well-told story, basically, but I don't think it's sort of meaningful or deep. For me, I mean, I have to confess, it kind of hits all my buttons.
You're a big fan of Jonah Hill, aren't you?
I like Jonah Hill. I like Miles Teller, so I was on board with those two anyway. It's based on a true story, which is another tick. It's got loads of narration, which is great. It's kind of about people building up something. And those sort of things in movies, I just love. Like, it just kind of hits my buttons.
Yeah, fair enough. Great.
So overall, I think I'd give it a B+, I think.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. I think it's not going to go down in the record books as the best film ever, but I think I was surprised. I was pleasantly surprised from Todd Phillips. Some people, maybe some older people, would probably find it a little bit disappointing, I think.
Okay. Disappointing, not disrespectful.
Possibly disrespectful. I don't know. I think if you had somebody who's in the Iraq War, you might think, oh gosh, this is really despicable. I don't think they're likable characters, but
okay.
I never saw them as such.
Has it made you consider hopping onto that Pentagon website yourself, man?
I'm slightly curious because it is anyone can go on it and have a look. And that was kind of what? Like, really? Like, the Pentagon is just advertising its contracts to anyone. But nah, arms dealing is not for me. I'll stick with podcasting.
Oh, right. Because it brings in so much money.
Bring
right.
the revolution on the airwave. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So, Laura, I don't know if you've managed to read that thing I sent you. I came across this thing on the internet which made me laugh quite a lot.
Yeah.
And it's all about Back to the Future.
No, man, I saw it. I looked at it. I laughed at it. Yeah, told Judith about it. Look, everything.
So it was just this little production note from one of the studio execs to Steven Spielberg, who's one of the producers of Back to the Future. It was some of his little improvements, little minor things that if you change this about Back to the Future, it would improve it. And it's just ridiculous. Like, this guy could not have more egg on his face. He's got an omelette on his face, basically, because his suggestions are just awful.
It's quite remarkable when you think about the smash hit that Back to the Future was that this guy said. Shall I read it out?
Yeah, yeah. Hit me with the highlights of it.
There's a story. I think it's Robert Zemeckis, who is the director, right?
Mm.
Just telling a story. He says, I'll tell you a great story about how Steven Spielberg, I guess, earned his exec producer fee on Back to the Future, which it says is about $20 million. You ready for it? Big deal. Sid Sheinberg will deny the story because he doesn't remember it, but it's a true one. Sid didn't like the title Back to the Future. Every other executive at Universal thought it was a great title, as did Steven Spielberg, and as did we, but Sheinberg would not get off the idea that Back to the Future was a bad title. He said, it's not hip, like Ghostbusters was hip. So he sent us a memo and he said, my suggestion for the new title of this movie is Spaceman from Pluto. Here are some notes I have regarding the script and how we can make reference to this in the movie. And he goes through that. And they say, well, he's serious about this, Steven. They go to Steven Spielberg to tell him this. What do? We don't want to change the title of the movie. So Spielberg says, okay, I know what to do. And so he dictates a memo back to Sid, and the memo said something like this. Dear Sid, thank you for your most humorous memo of such and such a day. We all got a big laugh out of it. Keep them coming. And Spielberg says, Scheinberg was so embarrassed to tell us he was serious about it that we'll never hear from him about it again. And he was right.
It's completely unbelievable, isn't it, really?
But the thing is, I find it completely believable. I mean, this is why, if you haven't listened to what we've been watching yet, here's a mini spoiler. This is what I was saying about that Studio Ghibli documentary, is that behind the scenes of these things, you'd like to imagine it's all dreamweavers who are totally in sync with each other. But it comes down to little meetings where some people give absolute clunkers. Do you know what I mean?
Stinker.
Yeah. But that's the creativity process. That's how it works. You throw the most important thing, rather than having the best ideas, is to have lots of ideas, so that in the process of throwing the rubbish out, you end up with the good stuff at the end.
It definitely made me think. I wonder if, like, part of the reason why Steven Spielberg is such a good director is he knows how to deftly handle stupid suggestions.
There's such a side to them you wouldn't even think. Like, directing and producing is so much more about the schmoozing, the networking.
And negotiating the trepid...
Well, then this is why. Do you remember that film I told you? It was State in Maine with William H. Macy playing a producer with a moustache.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a very low-scale film, slightly strange film. Have a look at it if you get a chance, listeners. It's a strange one. But his whole thing was playing a completely and utterly two-slash-many-faced guy who manages to be on everybody's side just to make it happen.
Well, I think I sent you the actual production notes that were sent to Steven Spielberg. Do you have that there?
This is it. I'm going to read it out because actually it's brilliantly written. And it was actually Bob Gale this was written to rather than Bob Zemeckis. We got that one wrong.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Here we go. Although I believe that the present draft is terrific and I marvel at the improvements that have been made from the Columbia version, I continue to believe the title leaves much to be desired. There are a number of reasons why I found the title less than wonderful, but my primary concern is that it appears to make the picture a genre picture. Imagine that. Disgusting.
How dare they?
I think the script and hopefully the film deserves a better title. Now that I've buttered you up, classic. He's doing it as well. I would suggest we consider the title Spaceman from Pluto. Underpinning these suggestions, can you imagine?
So bad.
Are the following thoughts. One, modify the dialogue on page 35 so that Sherman calls Marty a spaceman from Pluto. I think that's the kid in the barn, remember?
Yeah, when he turns up.
Number two, modify Marty's dialogue on page 77 so that he identifies himself as a spaceman from the planet Pluto instead of Darth Vader from Vulcan.
Which is one of my favourite lines in that scene. Can we play the actual clip of that little line that he delivers?
If I can find it, it will go right here.
Who are you?
My name is Darth Vader. I am an extraterrestrial from the planet Vulcan.
It's such a good line.
That's a dyed-in-the-wool classic, if that's a phrase. And number three, change the title of the book written by George and referred to on page 130 from A Match Made in Space to Spaceman from Pluto. I love how deep his thought process goes.
I've really nailed it, guys. This is how we do it. Spaceman from Pluto. Spaceman from Pluto.
You don't get, obviously, you get the idea. I'm sure there'll be those who will argue. And this, I think, is worth adding. I'm glad this is here because it does show you that this guy, he's not an idiot. He says, I'm sure there'll be those who will argue the movie will appear to the audience to be a cheap, old-fashioned sci-fi flick, which is what you associate that title with. Nonsense. I think it's a kind of title that has, in quotes, heat, originality, and projects fun.
Oh dear. It's so vague. That's the thing which I can't get my head around, because it's such a tenuous link It's like three moments in the movie where he calls him a spaceman, and otherwise it's a time travel
but
movie.
But you know what though? I think it's funny because Spaceman from Pluto is obviously lame, and it's because Back to the Future is a cultural icon now, and it's so well known and stamped into your brain. And everything, when you hear that title, you see Marty McFly, Michael J. Fox,
and the
Doc,
and everything.
Everything works. It's one of the most flawless pieces of filmmaking. It's tied up so tightly. It's brilliant. But the thing is, if you can really do your best to imagine exactly those changes the guy mentioned, I believe they would have gotten away with it, but it would not have been a catchy title.
And I think the film would have flopped.
No, not just because of the title, really. Do you think so?
John Carter.
No, well, that's different though. I think the film itself was not good enough, whereas Back to the Future is just so strong anyway.
Yeah, interesting.
Do you know, this could be quite a cool segment to have, man. I'm sure listeners out there will have come across stuff in their travels. But little moments of production studio magic where something that appears to be a tiny thing had a massive impact, or vice versa. Like, it could have been a disaster if that decision had been made. And one of the things I was interested in, and this is sort of not quite movie, it's Jaws. I was reading it when I got slated for having not seen Jaws recently, Phil. I don't know whether you heard that on the podcast.
I definitely heard that, yeah.
I was reading up about it, and it is really fascinating. The author of that book was talking about how the title came about. And I would say that Jaws, the title, is a fairly important part of that entire thing. Mm. As is that poster, right, where the shark coming
up. The girl swimming on the top.
Both those things came first in the book. Not the film, interestingly. And the way the title came about, they were talking about it, they couldn't come up with a name, and someone said, I'll just call it Jaws. And they were like, but it doesn't mean anything. It was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, but it's like,
no,
it's
way.
Just one of those things. It's like, well, I just think it works, just use it. And you can't quite believe that someone would go with that. But there are a few more, aren't there, like things like that.
Well, I've just remembered one, which it's not quite like that, but it is a story which I heard from a filmmaker, which is unbelievable.
Tell it, Helen. You've sold it, man. Come on.
It's a 20-minute long. You can find it on YouTube. We might even tweet it out. It's Kevin Smith.
Oh yeah.
The guy, the director of Silent Bob and Jay or whatever. What's it called?
Jay and Silent Bob, Strike Back,
Clerks,
and
things like that.
Well, he is Silent Bob.
He is Silent Bob. Yeah. He's a director, he's a film writer, everything like that. He got his kind of big launch from Clerks. And during that whole phase when he was kind of making waves in the film industry, people started having meetings with him. And he talks about this in his little audience session. And he says that he got brought into like one of the studios who was working on a new Superman movie.
Nice.
And, he's a big comic book fan, and he sort of telling him about all of his ideas about how he would do a Superman movie, and somehow he ends up getting like commissioned to write a draft for it and everything like that. And then he meets this producer guy, and this producer guy is just nuts, like properly crazy. And Kevin Smith's very funny. I almost feel like I would recommend watching the video, even if you carry on listening to this little story. But he goes to this guy and he's like, well, yeah, this is what I want Superman to do. You know, he could fight this villain, everything like that. And the producer's like, yeah. Right, like two big things. One, I don't think Superman should ever fly. He can't fly. And it's like, okay.
I'm sorry.
Like, this like main thing, like, yeah, he should never fly. And I don't think he should wear his costume. I think he should wear like a coat or something like that.
What?
And he's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? And then he's like, and another thing, yeah. In the third act, you should fight a giant spider. And
what?
He's like,
I love that.
Just fight a giant spider. And he's like, why?
That's
why?
Such what's a specific thing to say.
And he's like, the spider's the most deadly creature in all, like, and he gives all these facts about like, how awful these spiders are. And then Kevin Smith's just like, what? And he goes to talk to his buddy in like another studio exec, and he's like, did he mention about the giant spider? And he's like, yeah, what was that about? He's like, just don't say anything. So he goes off and he writes this draft and everything like that, and he has this back and forth with this producer for ages and ages and ages, and then eventually the project just gets stopped. Something, it gets dropped, it gets moved on. I think Tim Burton comes onto the project and he says, I'm not going to do this script, I'm going to do my own script. Which would eventually become the Nicolas Cage non-Superman movie.
Oh, yeah.
If you've heard about that. But anyway, fast forward like 5 years, and Kevin Smith is sitting in the movie theater, and he's watching this film, and then suddenly there's, it's Wild Wild West.
Wild Wild West.
And he's thinking, this is a terrible movie.
Wild
Wild. And then in the third act, there's a giant spider, and lo and behold, it's the same producer.
I love that. That scene was dreadful as well. A giant robotic spider in the desert. You're kidding.
In Wild West.
I love that. I love the idea that there are just these eccentric characters roving around the studio who probably just have loads of money and influence, and they think the reason they're there is because they've got gold dust living in their brains. Giant spider.
is going to make it work.
It's 1+1, guys. It's the most terrifying creature on the planet. Why? What film have you seen that doesn't have a giant spider? I love that.
It's just fantastic. Ridiculous. Seriously, we'll tweet out the YouTube clip for that little storytelling. He's a brilliant storyteller as well.
I can imagine, yeah.
He's very, very funny.
But you know what, man? We should also say, and incidentally, listeners, I'm sure you will have seen the news already that's happened in the last week. Gene Wilder sadly passed away. Iconic as Charlie and the Chocolate Factory's Willy Wonka from 1971, I think, was it?
Yeah, the 70s.
And
yeah.
I'm afraid Johnny Depp, you know, for all your eyebrow raising, fake British accenting, not a
patch.
Shadow, not a patch, thank you, Phil, on Gene Wilder's interpretation. And he's got quite a cool production story.
Yeah, so part of the condition for him doing that movie is the entrance that Willy Wonka has. You probably remember it. It's when having the whole crowd's there to see Willy Wonka, the famous
by the gates,
famous
yeah.
chocolate maker, and out comes this very kind of crooked old man with his cane hobbling along, and of course Gene Wilder walks out, and then he ends up leaving his cane behind, stuck in the ground, but he carries on walking and shaking his way down, and then he starts falling over. And then it becomes a forward roll, and he pops up.
Up, oh, Mr. Wonka springs.
And that was a condition. That scene being in it was a condition for him doing the movie. And very memorable scene. And apparently the reason why Gene Wilder insisted on that was he wanted to make absolutely certain that you never knew what was the truth and what was just an act with
Willy
Wonka.
That's cool, isn't it? Yeah.
Which I think actually is a big part of his character, which I think is really good insight.
And this is the thing, you know, if you've ever done anything creative, listeners, you'll know how hard it is to have people give advice and say, you should get rid of that, or you should add this in, or you know what, I really think that needs to change. And it can feel difficult, but just film in particular is littered with amazing, magical moments that either came out of something completely random out of nowhere or was someone else's idea. And, you know, we're laughing at some of the production ideas here, but often producers have a massively positive impact on their films because they do just genuinely know how these things work. And they're not buried in the script or buried in the direction. They've got more of an observer's point of view, and so they can see the bigger picture. That's why their input is so valuable, and that's why it's so funny when you when have Mr. Giant Spider. But yeah, so listeners, we would love to hear, if you know of any or come across any amazing production stories, we'd love to hear them. We love that stuff.
Any sort of bizarre casting choices that might have been or anything like that?
I mean, Christopher Walken as Han Solo, wasn't it?
Was it really?
I'm pretty sure, unless that was just a joke, I think he was once listed, yeah.
Also, David Schwimmer as Will Smith's character in Men in Black.
Unbelievable.
How crazy would that be?
I can't even begin to picture it.
Anyway, I'm sure you guys have heard plenty of these little stories. Do let us know. We love hearing them, so send them in.
SuperBabyBros@gmail.com, @SuperBabyBros on Twitter. And as you know, in a really serious note, RIP Jim Wilder. Fantastic Willy Wonka.
And also, can we play a little clip from Young Frankenstein?
Oh,
this
yeah.
This is possibly one of the hardest I've ever laughed at something. And I didn't even watch it in the movie. It was one of those 100 greatest movies, and they played a clip from... Young Frankenstein, Gene Wilder as the Dr. Frankenstein, dancing with Frankenstein's monster.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where fashion sits? Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes or cutaway coat, perfect fits.
Phil, have you seen the film Subway, starring Christophe Lambert?
No.
He's a French actor. Now, I'm bringing this up right at the beginning here, because I think quite a few people went to see it. And I've only seen snatches of it, one of those, in my time anyway. But I want to say this right now, so that if you're watching a laptop, you might just want to go on IMDb and look up a picture of Christophe Lambert in the film Subway. And yeah, just do that. Have a little look at the guy's little aesthetic there and have that in the back of your mind while I review the movie Julieta, a film by Pedro Almodovar.
Who?
Julieta, Phil. Julieta.
That can't be right, can it?
It is Julieta. I mean, I'm not going to go any further than that. I'm not good at speaking Spanish, Phil. But
Julieta.
Julieta. Yeah, that's correct, isn't it?
Okay.
Well, look, any Spanish listeners or Spanish-speaking listeners can please correct me, and please do. This is a Spanish-language movie which has hit mainstream cinema. As I said in the intro, a surprise to me. Watching this movie, I'm dazzled that it's had the distribution that it's got, but also I'm pretty delighted because it's not the kind of film I really expect to see at a big cinema in the middle of a city anymore.
What's it about? Is it just about Julieta?
Well, that's the question, Phil. Yeah, so it's about a lady called Julieta. We meet her at the beginning.
I wish listeners could see Laurie do this weird little shoulder thing as he says it.
I'm nervous every time I come to her. Am I allowed to call her Julieta just so that I don't embarrass myself and everyone else? It's about, she's an older lady. She's quite glamorous looking, very stylish, and she lives in Madrid. And we meet her at the beginning, about to move to Portugal with her boyfriend, and they're about to start a sort of new life together. Very happy. They seem delighted. They seem quite sort of philosophical and artsy couple. And I just thought, oh, it's going to be like a lifestyle movie. And then she walks through the street and she bumps into a girl called Bea.
Bea?
No, Phil. Bea, as in B-E-A, B. Okay. I think we'd say B. This is terrible, isn't it? I'm going to have to watch
just
the names.
Just go with the English
Bea.
Names.
All right. So she meets a girl called Bea in the street. Younger, very, very glamorous woman involved in fashion. And they have a conversation. And in that conversation, the name Antia is mentioned. And
Antia.
And this seems to affect Julieta in quite a large way. And all of a sudden she says, oh, I can't move to Portugal with you, boyfriend. I've got to stay in Madrid. I was kidding myself. She sells everything. She moves into another apartment. And it almost seems like she's having a nervous breakdown. And she starts writing a diary. We discover that Antia is her daughter. And she's writing a letter to Antia. And there's obviously some deep, dark life secret that none of us know about in the film, and we are going to learn over the preceding hour.
Oh, gosh, that sounds like a spoiler already.
No, no, it isn't. It's not a spoiler. It's given away in the trailer and all that kind of thing. Now, let me play a clip, and listeners, I'd like to apologise yet again, because this clip is entirely in Spanish, and for your benefit, I'm going to attempt to translate as we go.
This is not going to be a train wreck at all, is it?
No, no, and I'd like to say, it really is not intended to make fun of the film. If I snigger and laugh at all, it'll only be my complete and utter inability to capture what's on screen.
This is quite a serious movie.
All right.
So any comedy, just forget about the comedy aspect of this.
Yeah, okay. So you ready for this?
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go.
Julieta?
Julieta?
Bea.
I don't believe it.
Julieta? Madre mia.
Hug. They're hugging. What a surprise. Just last week I saw your daughter at Lake Como. You saw Antia? Yes, just imagine. We were looking at each other, and I went up to her because she didn't recognize me. But you look exactly the same, or even better. What did she say? That she'd come to the city to buy things for her children. She's got three, two boys and a girl. Yes, I don't know how she manages. Do you have children? No, I'm not even married. Where are you living? In Milan and New York. I'm an editor at Vogue, of course. I travel a lot. I was at Lake Como for a photo shoot. That's great. Say hello to your mother for me. That's it. That's the end of the clip. How'd I do, Phil?
Yeah, I'd hire you to read my audiobook.
I do apologise. And so that scene is the one I described. That is Julieta meeting this girl, B, who she obviously knows from her past, and suddenly discovering her daughter is got children, and this seems to affect her in a bad way. Now, I'm going to not spoil the film, because the whole thing is very much a discovery process. You learn a lot about Julieta, you learn about her daughter, you learn about the situation, you learn about Spain a little bit as well, and it all circles around Julieta and his relationship with a guy called Juan, which is X-O-A-N. So do you want to try and pronounce that, Phil?
Juan.
No, it's Juan. Juan. It's a bit Juan. Like, it's almost a bit like John. But it's an extraordinary movie, I've got to say, because what starts off as what looks like a lifestyle movie, as I said, suddenly becomes almost a film noir, but without crime. So the music is very kind of weighty and melodramatic. The shot composition uses a lot of contrast. So it's got quite rich colour, but it's got very, very deep blacks in the shot. So the shadows really leap out at you. And Julieta, as we go back to her past in particular, the older world vibe really takes full advantage of that contrasting method of colour, right down to Julieta's younger self's hairdo. And this is the point at which you can look up Christophe Lambert in Subway, because she looks exactly like that.
Right.
But it's worth saying that the lady playing Julieta is Adriana Ugarte, who I think is quite a well-known Spanish actress. You know, stunning for me. She reminded me of Keira Knightley mixed with Rose Byrne a little bit.
Okay.
She captures the screen massively, so
she's
get a lot of
striking.
She's very striking, but in her expressions as well, she carries like a depth of intensity about her, and matched also by this guy Juan, who she meets on a train in this flashback, and he reminded me of Matthew McConaughey, a kind of mix with Marouane Fellaini, the Man United footballer. He's got massive
big
curly
afro.
Rocks, but you know, very, very handsome guy. And it's kind of the, you know, the intensity of their relationship is quite raw. It's very hard to actually describe the film without spoiling it, so I'm just going for mood pictures.
Yeah, I'm getting a good sense of the mood. That's why I haven't really said much. But I'm going to ask you this question.
Please do.
Sometimes when you're watching a foreign film, you can just, stuff just doesn't really make sense. And you kind of, I don't know if you've ever found this, but you just kind of a bit lost about certain things that seem just so bizarre.
You mean decisions that get made in the way people behave?
Yeah, and just certain things that they say and do, and almost like the thing which I've worked it out is there's just different tropes in different sort of cinema styles. Did you find yourself a bit lost in the tropes?
Oh, or? Yeah, definitely. I mean, so Pedro Almodovar is quite a well-known director. He did Volver as well as, and that's Penelope Cruz's film, which is a lot to do with motherhood and is kind of dark in some places. He's also well-known for The Skin I Live In, which I've not seen.
Oh, I've heard about that one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very bizarre film, I think.
Antonio Banderas, I think.
Yeah,
and a woman
yeah.
to do with plastic surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and he would appear to like exploring the darkness that resides within people. And that really spills out into the characterization on screen, because everyone is a philosopher in some way or another. And they have, and you know, this is kind of where I, in answer to your question, people seem to be introspective and super melodramatic in a way that is a bit unfamiliar. Like it's almost like a soap opera in the way that you have these lingering shots and people say things that are so weighty with meaning that it's a bit surprising. And so you adapt to that quite early on though. And it like I said, the music, it's a particularly fast route into recognizing the kind of film that you're watching. And the music is constantly laying on much more than is on the screen. So you're expecting something of deep significance to happen.
So did that mean that emotionally you were quite engaged with the film, or was it kind of at a distance and you kind of enjoyed it as kind of a separate thing?
Oh, no, I loved it. And
thing.
What I would really love to know is how people who are native Spanish speakers and understand Spanish culture better, how they engage with this. Because I realised if, as you just had demonstrated by me when I translated that clip for you, if it was an English language performance, then I would think this is a bit over the top.
Yeah.
And whereas because it is in Spanish language, there's a certain distance that happens where you don't speak the language and you can observe it in a different way. And at the same time, you know, the Spanish aesthetic, one of the things I noticed was that every time they went to a new location, I found myself getting quite excited to see how artistic it was going to be. Because in those, I don't know whether you know what I mean, but it might just be Pedro Almodovar, but often in continental film like that, it's kind of fun and exotic to see the slightly flaking paint on the walls, and like the feng shui of all the living rooms that get used is really artistic, and it almost looks like a fashion shoot the whole way through. But there were lots of things about the composition, including the dialogue, the performances, the look of it, that put me at a distance from it. So yeah, I mean, I engaged with it completely differently.
But you were engaged.
Yeah.
But you kind of want to see what...
It was almost like an art piece, and I kept on trying to see what the metaphor was and what the overriding message was and what I was supposed to get from it. And there's no doubt that the film tangles a lot and quite heavily with things like grief and isolation and dependence, and guilt in particular is very, very strong in this movie. And the way that the characters end up getting knit together, it almost feels like... Well, you know, you talked about The Dressmaker with Kate Winslet.
Yeah, yeah.
That had a really weird, dark twist to it, didn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it was quite surprised. This is a bit like that too. Some of the things that happen, you kind of can't believe because they're so over the top. And you sort of believe that everyone, every character, surely has to have had some kind of nervous breakdown at some point because of the things that happened to them.
Right.
And yeah, it's a mix of quiet, suburban, beautiful settings with quite deep and unsettling ideas.
Did you enjoy the film? Is it a film to be enjoyed? Or is it a film to kind of appreciate and be challenged by?
I think so. It was enjoyable. I mean, it looked beautiful. I love the music and I really enjoy the melodrama. Like I say, with the film noir thing, when it starts becoming this almost detective story, but it isn't, I found myself getting quite gripped. I loved that sense of it, but at the same time, it does force you to confront some really odd family dynamic things, yeah.
Would you recommend somebody to go see it, or would you say maybe avoid it if blah, 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 blah?
I think if you're patient, then I would really recommend it. I would say it doesn't resolve many of the things that it flags up, so it doesn't appear to be a film that wants to do that. It's a ruminating kind of movie. It's an atmosphere piece. It's something to use, for you to look at and to ponder. So if you like that at all, you know, if you like wandering around art galleries, I can imagine you'd love it. I think if you don't mind spending a couple of hours on a film where at the end of it you're not sure that you've really understood it, then go for it. I'm sure there will be people who just think, forget this, I'd rather watch, you know, the new Spider-Man or whatever.
Yeah, so is it something that you sort of pondered as you after watching it?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to figure out what exactly the film was trying to say more than anything else.
What I'm curious about, and I know this is nothing to do with it, but ages and ages ago on what we've been watching this week, you mentioned The Lobster, which is an English film, which
yes,
is very kind of trippy and bizarre. Do you kind of get the same sort of vibe that maybe this is a kind of Spanish lobster thing?
No.
Do they occupy the same space?
I know this is a long... Phil's quite right. This is like 20 episodes ago I reviewed The Lobster, which I really didn't enjoy at all. My problems with The Lobster was that it was all about the artifice. Everything was odd and they didn't play anything that was remotely relatable. None of the ways the actors behaved and none of the settings were in any way understandable. This film is a human story. It's just the people in it are very dramatic people and the things that happen to them are very dramatic.
That sounds great. I'm very intrigued, I have to say. What grade would you give it?
It's a hard one to grade because it kind of stands apart from every other film I've seen this year so
really?
Far. It's so different. I really enjoyed it and I'd enjoy watching it again. You know, I said to Jude, I think it'd be fun to watch together. So I'd probably give it a B+, yeah.
Okay,
I can't
cool.
give it an A because I don't feel that I've really got a hold on it. And in a way, I don't feel that qualified to judge it because I'm so unfamiliar with Spanish cinema.
If you're a Spanish speaker or you lived in Spain or you are in fact Spanish, do email in and
yeah.
maybe you could help Laurie understand this movie a bit more.
I do think if you've got some spare time and fancy going to the cinema, this is really worth a go because it'll be so different to the stuff that you've seen.
Email in superbaileybros @gmail.com or tweet us @superbaileybros.
Would you like to have a go at saying the name of the film?
Julieta.
No, terrible. Julieta.
Hulululu.
You need to get that in the throat.
Julieta.
No, that's terrible.
So it's time for that time in the podcast where we look at emails and tweets.
You know,
catchy theme tune, huh, Laurie?
I hadn't realised before that I normally introduce this segment. And
well, I don't know what to say. Like
now, I know why.
You're always the introducer. That's your unique contribution to the podcast.
Okay, well, let's start with a tweet from Jeremy. Thanks for getting in touch, Jeremy. He says at Super Betty Bros, how many of these films have you seen? And he links to a BBC. .com article, eh? That's the commercial arm of the BBC, I see.
Want to get some money for the BBC there, Jeremy?
A bunch of film critics have chosen their top 100 movies to have come out in the 21st century. Slightly made me laugh, the title of this
article.
Isn't
that 16 years?
It's like top films of the 21st century. Yeah, we're 16 years in. It's not even a quarter of the way through. So everything since 2000, what are their big movies? And, well, we have seen 50%, haven't we, Phil?
Yeah, 50% kind of solidly, which I think is okay.
I'm fairly pleased with that, looking through the list, because some of them are quite obscure and sort of a more festival movies. And you've got to remember, Jeremy, that film critics, you know, that is their living. And Phil and I, we're sort of, it's a hobby that's gradually encroaching into all areas of our life.
Watch this space. I reckon a year or two, we'd be way up.
Since we've been doing this podcast, we've seen hundreds of films. I'm not even kidding, like four a week or whatever it is.
Yeah, it's something crazy, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. So does that answer your question, Jeremy?
You how have you seen Jeremy challenge us?
Listeners, have a look at that quiz. We'd be interested to know how many you've seen. We've had loads of tweets and emails about the Studio Jingles game, Phil.
Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, I'm so glad that people enjoy playing that game. Phil and I had a whale of a time.
a bit too much fun, I think.
Yeah. No, it was a lot of fun doing it. So Nicholas says, loved it. Never done before. Only missed two or three. Thank you for doing the Pathé one. Hashtag France represents.
Ah, Frenchman.
Bonjour, monsieur. Oh, Liv also says, at Super Betty Rose, contrary to predictions, I think this is our predictions, she says, at Darth Fishbag, and I loved Darth Fishbag, love playing along to the Studio Jingles quiz, frustratingly close on so many. That was your experience, wasn't it?
It was excruciating because it was there, but it was an empty knowledge.
Yeah, and then Esther also says, playing it during a long car journey, hashtag such fun. So Phil, what I'm getting from this is we should do more of these silly quizzes.
Yeah, I think it was a particularly good topic because it was something which you didn't ever think about, but it slipped under the radar. So if we can find something else like that.
Well,
you
did say round two, didn't you?
Well, round two, yeah. I have a plan for round two, but...
Do you really?
Seeing as though I was in the firing line, it was my knowledge being tested.
Right.
I think I might
game for it, man. I'm always spoiling for a fight. Hit me up.
I love how it's a fight when you're doing it, but when it's me, it's just like a challenge, you know, personal challenge.
No, it's a fight. And we've got an email here now from Josh. He says, glad to have Phil back. James did well and was far more...
Sorry, what was that?
Well, keep going. There's more where that came from. It says, more appropriately reverent to Phil than me, apparently, which doesn't make sense. You weren't even there.
Well, maybe he was saying he was kinder to me than you were.
Uh-huh, right. Okay. You need to know where your bread is buttered. Just look at the plus one to Phil. That is an incredibly unkind thing to say.
Yes.
He says, plus one for finding Dory. He says, I'm marking you up for correctly assessing the mayor-ness. That's a shame. I mean, we thought it was all right, didn't we?
It wasn't bad at all. I think it was kind of... It just shows how brilliant Finding Nemo was.
Yeah, that's the thing. It wasn't bad by any means, but it wasn't spectacular. He says he took his four-year-old along and he was invested, but not really scared by anything. And perhaps it needed it. That's what I was saying about Finding Nemo. It really had the peril and the darkness and the danger of the sea.
There was quite a few scenes. Even the opening is pretty dark, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Josh flags up in particular, he found at least five situations that were set up to be threatening and dangerous in Finding Dory that were immediately solved. Which is a very good point, actually.
That is a good point, yeah.
Josh says, too long an email, pay your money, take your choice. Well, we did.
What does that mean?
I don't know. He finishes up by referring to himself as the mystery bro who is also a pixel. So he's a bro and a pixel. He thinks he's allowed to straddle both. Not the case, Josh. And then he also adds in brackets, don't read out my name. I'd like to apologise at that point for having read out your name for the entire email. But there you go. Sorry, Josh.
Honest mistake.
We'll do better next time. Lots of other people getting in touch to say how much they enjoyed James on the podcast again. Thank you, everyone. And James, hope you're listening. People really loved you again, so we're just going to have him back, Phil. Obviously not to replace you.
What are you talking about? I'm here to stay,
well,
Laurie.
You and James could do
anywhere.
One, and you can be mean about me while I'm away. How's that?
The thing is, it wouldn't have that same zing because we're both happy people, you know, unlike somebody.
What are you talking about? I'm a very happy person. I'm so happy! One here from Angeline, she says, boo to the YouTube idea. I can't listen to that on my walk to work, can I? Now, I'd like to add to this, because someone else was talking to me about this just the other day. You can listen to it on your walk to work, because you just get the YouTube app, pop the video on, pop it back in your pocket. Fine. Same thing as listening to a podcast, isn't it, Phil?
Yeah, people just don't like change, do they?
No, but Angie and I hope it's okay. What we've been watching is still going to happen, and the podcast is still going to be the podcast. There's no change there. It's just to stop the feed being so full of episodes that you can't find what you want to listen to.
Laurie's got his reasons, and you know, Laurie's a wise man. Trust.
I'm not that. I'm not wise at all, but I'm very opinionated. So let's see what happens. Final one here, Alistair Brown. Hey, Alistair. He says, at Super Betty Rose, saw Suicide Squad last night. While it definitely has issues and major cuts, I kind of liked it. And with its box office sequels?
So, I mean, glad that somebody's mentioned Suicide Squad, because I haven't really put my finger in the pie, really.
Oh, yeah. Have you been waiting to jump on it?
I've been kind of waiting for it to come up so I could talk about it, because I wasn't there. James was doing that one with you.
We read out your email, man.
You did read out my email, which was great, so I got a little bit of a thing. But something I want to point out with, you guys seem to be quite harsh on Cara Delevingne. Is that how you say her name?
Cara Delevingne, I think, yeah. The
Enchantress.
Model.
Mm. Yeah, the eyebrows lady. I think she did all right. I think that's quite a controversial opinion, but I kind of liked her in it. I thought it was kind of weirdly silly and fun.
Well, I think when James and I were talking, we were particularly contrasting her with the Joker, who I think everyone was excited about, wanted to see, and there's obviously history for him as a bad guy. He's quite versatile. And so having Jared Leto's Joker there and then kind of shoved to the side in favour of this belly dancing sort of mystical lady was a bit of an odd choice. And I think you'd agree, even if she was all right, the sort of final climax was pretty generic, wasn't it?
The final climax was generic. But I remember it stuck out to me when you were reviewing it. You kind of were laughing at, or I think James was more, in all honesty, laughing at Enchantress. For some reason,
imagine
it kind of worked
for me.
Imagine
if Phil had been there, James, the fight that would have ensued.
maybe we wouldn't have been too happy. I don't know.
But there we go. Alistair, I'm glad to hear you enjoyed it. That's great. And I think a lot of people have liked it. And it certainly wasn't terrible. I think I gave it a B- in the end. As far as a sequel goes, yeah, the box office performance has been really quite impressive. There's certainly been a drop, but it stayed right near the top, hasn't it?
Yeah, I think mostly people were just disappointed because I think they could see a really good idea for a movie and it not quite reaching the heights that they expected.
Yeah.
I think that was all. That's where the backlash is. I don't think it's a terrible movie at all.
No, and I wonder whether we may see a sequel, but it's just hard to know what DC are going to do. I think they've already thrown up too much to just drop it out of nothing. Like, they've got all these characters, And I think there are big fans of the DC comics who will still go and see it. It's kind of whatever is done with it. And in a way, it doesn't matter how much it gets slated by the critics or even by the fans. People still go in with that sense of hope, don't they? I don't think I've ever seen a film like that that hasn't at least drawn a box office success.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think the one to watch is Justice League now. See how that tonally adjusts.
Yeah, right. I think after a while, just uber seriousness just tires you out. Can't do it.
I don't know. It's not the worst thing. Dark Knight, I love that.
Yes, you loved it.
Move on.
For another day. That's the end of the emails, man. Hey, thanks so much, everyone, for getting in touch. As we said at the beginning, if you haven't ever sent us an email or a tweet, we'd love to hear from you. You can have your email read out in an unintelligible / dismissive way, as we just did. No, that's not true at all. As we say every week, we love getting your emails and tweets. It means a great deal to us that people listen and engage. That's why we did the podcast in the first place.
Yeah, we love hearing your guys' thoughts and opinions, even when they disagree with us. Do email in, and don't be afraid if you've never done it before. We're really quite nice, aren't we?
We're lovely, yeah.
That was so creepy. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a very special guest. We've got Judith with us. She's back. She's the Roman reporter. She's back home to roost.
Right. Okay. I don't know what to say.
Judith is my wife, and she's also a mum, aren't you, Jude? Or a mom?
I'm a mum.
Oh, you're not a mom?
No.
Okay. So we're going to be talking about Bad Moms, the new gross out comedy, and I haven't gone to see this one personally because I was disgusted by it, but
trailer really,
yeah, it makes me but you guys have gone to see it as a bit of a
we
date.
Took that bullet. You actually babysat for us so we could go and watch it, Phil.
Yeah, that's correct.
Phil the legend.
Thanks.
Yeah, you gotta be happy with that. Okay, listen, so this film is written by the two guys who also wrote The Hangover. It's good, isn't it? A film about mums written by two middle-aged men. It's a great start. And it is about Mila Kunis's stressed-out mum. She's trying to hold down a job. She has to look after her pathetic baby-like husband as well as raise two children. And wouldn't you know it, all the mums at the school are judging her at her work. They're all like children are her bosses. They don't know anything. Only she knows anything. And she has to hold all her life together while everyone else is terrible and she's wonderful. That's more or less the plot.
It's all about trying to be the perfect mum, isn't it?
Well, trying not to be a bad mom, or maybe embracing being a bad mom. Can we call it mum? So we
let's just go mum. We're British. Let's go with it.
I wonder why they changed Zootopia to Zootropolis for us, didn't they? But they didn't change bad moms to bad mums.
It's outrageous.
Well, it's just obvious. Anyway, this is boring, isn't it? Should we play a clip?
Yes.
Listeners, I'm sure, are dying to figure out what kind of tone the movie's going to have. So I'll play this clip. Judith, any commentary on this clip? What happens in it?
So this is where some of the bully-like mums hold a PTA meeting for the school.
Well, they're advertising it, aren't they?
Yeah. And so it's really important that everyone's there. But they're just a bit mean to some people. And then there's a hot dad who's a widower who comes on the scene and they all love him. And there's a couple of funny things in there. But even in the trailer, it's quite rude at places.
Yeah, we talked about this. I haven't bleeped it out. I've tried to cut it out. I mean, if we were putting
Think you should bleep.
Do you think we should?
Yeah, I think bleeps is easier.
I think sometimes bleeps are just as rude as the words they bleep over. But okay, anyway, here we go. Here's the clip.
Emergency PTA meeting tonight. Tell all your friends.
Oh, God. There goes that little weird stay-at-home mom.
Emergency PTA meeting tonight. Tell all your friends.
Oh, I don't have any friends. I'm pretty isolated at home. I have 4 kids.
Okay, good. Please move along. Thank you. Emergency PTA meeting tonight.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, my God. She just got all her sadness all over me.
Oh, here comes the hot widower.
Give me that.
Hey, Jesse.
Hey, guys.
Hi. Cute backpack you got there.
Oh, yeah, I'm such an Elsa.
You're hilarious. You really are.
He's so hot. Here you go.
I'm so glad his wife died.
You know what? I saw him install a car seat yesterday in 2 seconds. I'm telling you, it was like boom, boom, click. It was so hot.
Oh, gosh.
Right, so my initial reaction to this trailer was so difficult that I didn't want to watch this film. Judith, you're a mum. You're also a woman. I feel like you are kind of the target market for this film. Did you feel like it was hitting your buttons?
I felt like it was a movie kind of trying to be like a sorority party for mothers. So I think there are bits of it that rung true in that I think you can feel the pressure sometimes to want to conform, want your children to be the best, want to kind of give them the best start and things. And that was a lot of what the film was trying to put across, was that these mums were tirelessly working because they loved their children and things. But it was just a bit over the top, and it just made everyone out to appear like they're martyrs and are doing everything for the best of their children, when actually a lot of the time it just seemed that they just constantly felt sorry for themselves, constantly thought that they were the martyrs and that no one really appreciated anything that they did. All of their husbands, I think Laurie made this comment when we came out of the cinema, but all of their husbands...
You thought it too.
No, I did. And I agree, but I thought I would say that it was you had said it first, because I don't think I'd thought about it. But every single man, apart from the hot widower, was a loser, basically. Like her, Myla's husband was the most annoying character I have seen on a TV, like or on a film for a long time. Like he was just so annoying. And you kind of think like how did she end up with someone like him, but how did he end up like that? And oh yeah, he was so annoying. And it, like every other man was just ridiculous, a deadbeat. No one seemed to have a husband who was worth anything.
And did you find that empowering, women are the best, or was it just irritating?
It's just irritating. Yeah, absolutely irritating.
Laurie, how did you feel as a man watching that?
Yeah, I didn't enjoy this film very much, it has to be said. And gee, I agree with everything that Judith said. The husband thing is just... You know, we did a long time ago, in what, like in the single digit figure episodes, Phil, we did Movie Hate Rom-Com Rivals. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And I've got this whole thing about it annoys me when in a film where you want someone who's not going out with a hot guy or a hot girl to go out with them, they have to split up the relationship first. And to get you to sympathize with the person who's outside that relationship, they make the love interest really awful and horrible. And it's almost like the hot guy or the hot girl is an idiot for going out with them. Does that make sense, what I just said?
Yeah.
And so to get you to sympathize with them, you make everyone awful. And this film did that with the husbands, but it also did that with the mums as well. They did everything they could to stereotype and characterize all the mums they didn't want you to like, and all the dads, the people they didn't want you to like, they're just idiots. And Mila Kunis is just this hero by comparison, even though really she's pretty self-centered, isn't she?
Yeah. She is very self-centered.
Do you think there's a grain of truth in this, Judith? Like, comedy is exaggerating and kind of hyperbolic and everything like that, and it's going a bit larger than life. But do you think if you distilled it down, do you think that you could see truth in that kind of the feelings of the women and things like that?
I think there's probably a bit of truth, like for many women. But I wonder if they've just exaggerated everything to try to make it funny. And especially the kind of bits in the middle where Myla decides that actually she wants to run for PTA president, and she's going against the mom bully of the school who's currently the PTA president. And they have this basically like sorority style party, and like all of the mums go, they're all like drinking cheap wine and dancing provocatively. Yeah. And you just think, oh, like, come on, it's just so cliche. Like, that
no other way to have fun and be cool than to get wasted and dance around, fall downstairs, Phil.
Oh, yeah. Did you find it funny at all?
There were bits of it that were funny. Some of the people in the cinema find it much more funny than me. So, like, there are bits where, like, I think I don't really appreciate crude jokes like so much. Like, sometimes they can be used in a funny way, but a lot of it was quite crude. There was like quite a lot of bad language used. And again, it just kind of rings back to maybe, I don't know if I've even seen The Hangover, but like one of those like bad neighbors or something like that, that kind of rude.
Gross out comedy.
Yeah.
It was quite funny because there were big laughs in the cinema. It had the biggest laughs of any film I've seen, even louder than Central Intelligence, but it had, this is a stupid thing to say because of course I don't know, but to my ears, it had the hollow sound of people who were desperate to laugh. I mean, I think I've already said this to you, Phil, off air, but there was one line where Christina Applegate, who plays this mum who's the head of the PTA and is a really mean mum, perfect mum, all that kind of stuff, she comes to Mila Kunis and Mila Kunis is doing something rebellious and she won't stop it. So Christina Applegate's like, you better watch it. Winter is coming. Do you get the joke?
It's Game of Thrones reference, isn't it?
But is it a joke?
No, it's not a joke. It's not a joke.
That got the biggest laugh. That got the biggest laugh in the entire film. Everyone cracked up as if it was a funny thing to say, but it's not. It's just referring to Game of Thrones. I think to me that all that wrapped into one was everything the film was trying to do. It was pandering terribly to a marketeer's idea of what women are like, basically.
I think there were a couple of funny bits, or the three ladies who are the originators of the bad mums, and they all come together and feel that they're a bit worthless. So there's, you might remember the actress's name, so the one who's especially crude.
Oh, that's Catherine Hahn, I think it is.
Yeah. Catherine Hahn, that's right. And she's quite funny. She's super crude, but she's fairly funny, yeah.
She's sort of the Melissa McCarthy bridesmaid's role, isn't she?
Yeah, and then the other blonde-haired lady.
Kristen Bell.
She is kind of like the dappy mother who's trying really hard to impress her husband. She's got four kids and is working really hard and just seems to be clueless, doesn't have any friends. But she makes a couple of funny jokes in the bar. Do you not think like there was a couple of...
No, you're right. I'm sorry. I was being over the top. So, you know, they were still chuckly jokes, but they were very low bar sort of things. Like, and we're talking about because she's this slightly sad mum, they just make jokes about, oh, your sadness is rubbing off on me. And her fantasies, there's quite a nice, funny fantasy she has about getting in a not very serious car accident. So she has to then lie in hospital for 2 weeks and they bring her food and she just gets loads of sleep and watches loads of TV and nurses rub cream into her feet. And she's like, do you guys have that fantasy? And they're like, no, no one does. That's quite funny. But those moments were very few and far between, don't you think?
Yeah, but there were a few. I think some people, like, especially if you like films like The Hangover and things like that, I think people would enjoy watching it. Like, I didn't come away thinking that it was the best movie in the world or it's not a feel-good movie or anything, but it wasn't a horrible film to watch.
Bridesmaid had like big crossover appeal between men and women. It was a female-led cast, everything like that. It was very much a movie about women. This is, again, is a movie about women. Do you think it still has that sort of cross-gender appeal?
I don't imagine many blokes going to see it. So in the cinema, like, it was mostly girls. Like, there weren't loads of people there anyway, but it was mostly girls there. And I imagine not many men would want to go and see it, especially like single men, is my impression. But, and I think some women would really enjoy it.
What grade would you give it, Judith?
A C.
A C? Wow, that's quite low.
Is it quite low?
That's fine. If that's what you think, that's what your gut's telling you, go with it.
I think yeah.
Be a bad mum. Say it. Give it a C.
C.
I agree with you. I give it a C minus.
Wow, that's a low scoring thing. I'm quite glad I didn't have to see this. Thank you for letting me not see this film.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know if people think we're just miserable though and a bit too serious about it all. Because I listened to a review with someone else and someone else thought it was hilarious and really enjoyed it. So maybe it's just me and my lack of sense of humour.
No, you're entitled to your own opinions, aren't you?
Yeah, and everyone, please disagree with this, guys. That's the whole point. I'd be interested to know what you thought if you went to see it and undoubtedly a lot of people are able to take it a lot less seriously than me. My excuse for it is that because we see so many films, you get used to just analysing them, don't you?
And I think especially with comedy at the moment, you can so clearly see the strings that they're trying to pull. I think that's my problem with it. I could see the audience, the marketing behind this movie pitch, and it just, no thank you.
Yeah, if you want a bonus, it's not a good one. What is the deal with every film like this with female leads, a comedy movie with female leads? Every single one, like three films I've seen recently, The Heat and The Boss and this movie, all three of them have a scene in which the principal character gets down to her bra and it's a mum bra, and then they redress each other. And I was just thinking, like, is that such a cool scene that it needs to appear in all of those movies? Is it funny?
It's a classic thing. I think that's like women getting ready is a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but you would think in a film like this, like they wouldn't want to do that. Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't know. Judith, enlighten us.
A little bit cliche, but I think, yeah, women do enjoy like getting dressed up and dressing each other up and like seeing if they can make each other look nice and things. So I think it's like a reasonable thing, but the bra thing is something that comes out quite a lot, and maybe, you know, something else could be thought of. It's kind of like Bridget Jones and her pants, isn't it? That kind of
that's
style.
True, that's
but then
true.
That was quite good with Bridget Jones, and that was, they did it once. I thought it was funny, and they did it once. They don't need to do it in every single film. Come on.
Yeah, there you go. Well, isn't that fun?
Hooray!
Bad Mums. What a bad movie.
Thank you very much for coming on,
and obviously
Judy.
I'm the best mum, and I'm not going to hide it.
You are a bit mum, by the way. How's about that? Episode 40 is over. Do you feel our first foray into podcast middle age went well, Phil?
I actually feel like I'm actually a 40-year-old going on 20, you know?
40 going on 20.
Yeah, exactly.
I hear what you're saying.
I feel like I've hit a new lease of life.
That's right. The thing is, like, health advancements and blah, 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 blah mean we'll probably all be living longer. So 40 is a big deal.
It's not even middle age, it's quarter age.
Life begins at 40, as some greeting card somewhere will say. Kind of odd catalogue of movies this week. Bad Mums, Julieta, War Dogs, all quite unusual, I think.
Yeah, not typical sort of movies.
Yeah, so tell us if you've seen those, what your thoughts were. Plus ones, minus ones, always welcome, of course.
Yes, I think I'm in the lead still.
Well, that remains to be seen. We should top that up, actually. We should have like a little Gryffindor house.
I'm Gryffindor,
gem
yeah.
Chart on. No, are you kidding? You're not. I'm happy to be Slytherin. Look, if you'd read the Cursed Child
play, of course
play,
you'd be happy to be
you
Slytherin.
You would know there's nothing wrong with being
dark
Slytherin.
Man, you dark, horrible man. All about winning.
Goodness.
See, that's why I'm Gryffindor.
Outrageous behaviour. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be back next week with a load more awesome films. They just keep coming. Kubo and the Two Strings is going to be out soon.
Yes, and man, we forgot. I told you right from the beginning, we need to flag this up. Sing Street.
Oh, yes.
We saw Sing Street yesterday.
I've seen it already, of course. You finally watched it.
You reviewed it ages ago. This is
John Carney, yeah. He did Once, he did Begin Again.
I was waiting for this movie to appear on cinemas, and it literally came and went in a flash.
It's one of the strangest distribution things I've ever come across. I don't understand what happened with the funding. It looks as though they just ran out of money and it was hardly shown in the cinemas. What a massive mistake. I think, listeners, I can't imagine anyone not enjoying that movie.
I genuinely think this is the first time where I think I and you, Laurie, want to champion a movie.
Yeah.
And say, we're going to put our stake in the ground, put our flag.
Super Baby Bros say, this is the one to watch.
This is worth seeing. It's a great movie. It's really fun. It's got a really nice atmosphere. You should check it out. It's on DVD, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just in particular, because it was hardly on the cinema, you know, so many people just won't ever see it because it'll never occur to them. So we're playing our part there. And I'm not going to pretend it's the greatest film ever, but I do think it's excellently made. It's funny, it's heartwarming, it's moving, great music, everything.
It's the sort of cinema which I just really love.
Yeah, me too, man. There you go.
It's got the Super Bailey Bros seal of approval.
Well, we should even do this again. I think we're probably, you know, we've got all these features that keep springing up. I bet there are some good distribution stories out there about amazing films that just didn't get shown on the screen. So we can bring up Sing Street again and talk about other movies like that. How about that?
Yeah, sounds good.
Idea. Cha-ching! Right, we've rambled on long enough. Listeners, thanks for joining us. We'll speak to you again next week. Remember to tune into YouTube for what we've been watching and everything else.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Do email in. Cheers.
Bye.
So, Laurie, I happen to know, because you're my brother, that you're a fan of the TV show Suits.
Well, I was a fan of the TV show Suits. In later series, it tailed off quite drastically.
And, well, so I watched it as well. I'm still a fan. I still enjoy it. And it's about lawyers and everything like that.
You bet it is,
yeah. And literally, having watched this sort of five seasons of this show just the other day, I finally twigged that the show's title is a bit of a pun, because it's both about suits that they wear, like nice designer suits, and lawsuits, which you might call suits.
You're joking me. I'm like, filled mind blown.
No, but genuinely, my mind was blown. I was like, Wow, like I couldn't believe that I'd never picked up on it. And it suddenly sent me on a brainwave, and it reminded me of, you know, Pokemon, of course.
Oh, you bet I know Pokemon as
let
well.
Let me try and blow your mind right now. You know those legendary bird Pokemon. You know what's going on with those three, right?
Do you want me to, oh, I know what's going to happen here. Do you want me to do it?
Yeah, go.
So are you talking about Arctic Uno?
Yeah.
One, Zapdos 2. Mole, Trez, 3. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. And the thing is I talked to somebody about that and I mentioned it, and then I kind of casually like, oh, you know, well, you know, the Uno, Dos, Trez thing. And they're like, what? How have I... And they'd be like, this is like a 30-year-old guy who'd be playing the game for ages. And just,
you're kidding me.
What? How have I never noticed this? And then it made me think again
they're
of another one,
moments.
Which is the Harry Potter thing. I mean, I probably you've thought of the Diagon Alley.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
Also Nocturnally.
Yeah, yeah.
But then our dad, I remember him blowing my mind when he was talking about the book 5,
yes,
Sirius's
House.
I know
house, what you're going to say.
Grim Old Place.
Yeah.
Grim Old Place.
I know, man. Me too. I did not pick that up even at all.
It was mind blown. And the reason why I do it as a bonus is just because I like the idea, even if I haven't blown your mind, somebody at home is going, what?
You're kidding me. Their world is currently falling apart at the seams.
How did I not
what
see
else
this?
Is there in life?
Exactly.
Do you know what? Like, the thing is, it really does happen. And this is one of the peculiar things just in life. But it's beyond movies and video games, Phil. They're like, things like that just keep happening. Our dad's another one in reverse. Have you not heard our dad say that he previously didn't realize that the days of Advent actually related to the day in the month?
Oh,
he just
yeah.
thought there are 25 days of Advent and that it started. So what day of Advent are we up to? We're in the fifth day, as opposed to recognizing that it was because we were on the 5th of December. Did you realize that? He never connected those two things. And sometimes your brain just does that. There are loads of them, man.
Mind blown.
Yeah, let's have some more of that.